Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today we have Corey Schumann, Silverlight and Windows Phone 7 consultant, trainer, and MVP. Corey, how are you?
Great, Jesse. Good to be here.
One of the things that you and I have talked about over the last couple years has been the role of Blend for developers. And I would draw a distinction. I'm not sure that this is a universal distinction, but I would draw a distinction between developers who don't see themselves as having specific UI design skills, and then somewhere in the middle of the spectrum of folks like you who bridge design fully with development, and then people who are pure designers. Do you think that those distinctions still exist?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that the Silverlight Blend space, that there aren't too many creatives. And I think that probably stems from the fact that most of the creatives are Mac-based. And it would almost even go back, once a cynical designer I knew was saying that it goes back further to when Windows didn't use Helvetica, rather they used Arial instead and created Arial. So there seems to be some deep-seated
prejudice, bigotry.
Oh yeah. No! you can use those, but you know there are some design shops out there, and there are some designers who prefer Windows over Mac, and it's exciting to have those people start to get in the Silverlight space to bring their expertise. So then there's the creative developer, which is kind of in the middle, bridges the developer and designer role. Those are probably known more as integrators, and that's where I think I fall. I'm a developer who has creative tendencies. And
let's be clear. You're using creative in a very specific way, not someone who has creativity, but rather someone who has artistic design capability. Is that correct?
Perfect. Exactly. It's a graphic designer, if you will.
Okay. So I'll tell you what, I won't call them turtleneck geeks and you won't call them creatives and we'll be...
Great. We'll call them graphic designers.
Because, you know, we like to think that we're creative in our development work.
Right. It's kind of the art science question. Is coding an art? Is coding a science?
Fair enough. It's probably both. And it's probably more art than science, even if you have no artistic ability.
Exactly.
But we digress.
Exactly. So going back, I think that in the Silverlight space, what's emerged as the leading winning group is the developers. Silverlight is such a strong platform for development, and it's, I think, really picking up steam kind of in the enterprise space. And so it's still important, and the love that I have for Silverlight, and the reason why I was attracted to it in the first place, was you can create great user experiences very quickly with great tooling. And I see more and more developers get in and think, oh, you know, I don't necessarily need to use Blend, I'm with Visual Studio, but it's creating the same boring applications that I try to run away from.
Yes. Well, let me ask you about the Blend question, because again, here I see two different arguments. The argument that I find absolutely compelling and almost incontrovertible is that there are certain things that you may want to do in your Silverlight application that it's insane not to use Blend for. And the ones that occur to me are, for example, if you're interacting with visual state management, if you're changing the template of a control, or if you're creating an animation. Those three things, you know, you can do in Visual Studio, but they're painful, and Blend makes them painless. So it's hard for me to imagine a developer not using Blend for those three aspects. Beyond that, I think, you know, we had Adam Kinney on, and he was talking about how he uses Blend for all UI and uses Visual Studio for the coding. And I think that's a question that a lot of developers have, of where is the line of what I do in Blend where it's less clear than something like creating an animation.
Much like Adam, I am the exact same way. I have Visual Studio and Blend open at the same time. And I've tried and tried and tried to use the CIDR editor in Visual Studio 2010. And it's good. It does its job. But Blend by far is superior for all UI, in my opinion. From time to time, binding. I'll actually get into the XAML and bind by hand. But Blend has a fantastic binding utility. Sample data is a huge one. You know, I'm starting off a project and I can quickly create data. through Blend, as you mentioned, visual states, behaviors, storyboards, animations. It's always dangerous to talk to developers about animations because they're perceived as frivolous. You know, we can talk about that a little bit later, but Blend itself is invaluable when it comes to the UI.
I have to say that I'm with Dave Platt, author of Why Software Sucks and general all-around brilliant guy, who would argue, I think, that animation is frivolous except when it isn't. And frivolous animation probably should be dispensed with. Animation that conveys information, on the other hand, is a whole different thing.
I don't think you could put it any better. <It's>,
there you go. I left you speechless. I like it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I use animation for purpose, for meaning, lead the user. But animations to, you know, swipe something in when it just doesn't need to be animated in, you know, get rid of those. It makes software.
Right. In television, they call that a Playhouse 90 effect. You know, the new technical director who's using wipes for everything, you know. And the example that I always give to developers who are first asking about, well, what would be, you know, dripping cynicism, what would be a meaningful use of animation, is when you're rotating an object to show the back of the object, and thereby getting more space above the fold on your web page, for example. And we see that all the time where you have some kind of form and there's a little eye in a circle is an icon that's become fairly universal to say there's more information. You click on that and it rotates and shows you the back. Well, if you don't have that animation rotating it to the back, if you just flip to the back, the user has no idea what just happened. Whereas if you just a little bit of animation, it's very, very obvious that you're going to the back of this form, looking at the information, rotating back where you were, and there's no loss of the metaphor of a real object that you're interacting with.
Right. It's kind of like the move towards natural user interfaces, where it mimics kind of like a baseball card. You're flipping it back and forth, and we need that. We need that kind of tactile. Phone is a great example with the panorama and the pivot controls. It's discoverability. So if you there's part of the next side hanging out, visually hanging out on the right side, and it's asking you, like it's kind of funny to say the UI is asking, but it really is. The UI is asking you to think. What's over here, and you want to swipe over there. So having that swiping animation is needed, but much like the flipping over of information or settings.
It's funny how many of us come back to the same thing. The panorama control. I was just talking with Jeff Blankenberg about this. I don't know if you know him. He's a great guy. He's a DPE field evangelist out in the Heartland. And I said to him that the first time I saw that, the panorama control, I thought, well, this is broken. It's not fitting into the screen properly. But then I realized, well, it does, as you say, either ask you or invite you into this curiosity about, well, what is that? And you go and reach over and suddenly you realize, oh, this continues. There's more. There's more related things. There's more I can do here. And it is very, very effective at that. And it turns out to be fairly straightforward to code as well.
Right. And that's really nice that they provided the controls to do that instead of asking us all to this. Here's the panorama, but you have to code it yourself. So that's great. That control is fantastic. It
pushed. Now, in the early days, I didn't mean to interrupt you. In the early days, there was a distinction drawn between the Metro look and the panorama look. And am I right that panorama is now considered part of the overall Metro look? In fact, the entire look and feel of a standard Windows Phone 7, I'm not talking about a game where anything goes, but standard application, that entire look is now referred to as Metro?
Absolutely. A distinction that you can make with Metro is the font, the type that's being used. It's a flavor of Sago. I think it's Sago WP, Windows Phone, that was ported from, I think they had a flavor of that on the Zune HD. A lot of the Windows Phone takes leads from the Zune HD, which from the UI perspective is even further out there, and that's kind of where I think that the UI was really tested before bringing it to the Windows Phone. But I wanted to go back for a second because you were talking about having the screen real estate invite you or ask you. I think that we're starting to get into a renaissance with user interfaces, and I think it's based upon mobile and the mobile space. with web pages, there are definitely distinct standards. You know, there's kind of like Web 2.0 started to simplify and minimize a lot of visual aspects in the user interface. But then the iPhone came out and it started being very tactile, and people started to have to learn new paradigms, if you will, of discoverability of an interface or learning the interface. And I think that Windows Phone 7 piggybacks off of that in asking the user to learn some things. And I think that's good for an interface to ask the user, push the user a little bit further than they're comfortable with.
So without qualifying good versus bad, from a design perspective, do you see a significant difference in the UI, the look and feel, the user experience of an iPhone and a Windows phone?
Absolutely. Originally, right off the bat, right? Like, you initially come in, and I think as a whole experience combined, I think the Windows phone has a lot to compete with there. And it's just so tightly integrated. Certainly, iPhone's been around for a long time and has its strengths, but you can definitely tell a different flavor. It's kind of like Apple's, you know?
And when you said tightly integrated, which were you talking about?
So Windows Phone 7 has Facebook, Google, Windows Live. So there's so many services that are integrated that, you know, I don't really use Facebook, but once I started using the Windows Phone, it didn't really ask me to use Facebook. It just kind of gave me updates about what people were doing, and it was very casual about giving me that information. It wasn't in my face or abrasive. And before I knew it, I was like, oh, wait a minute, this information is coming from Facebook. It's just, as a whole integrated experience, it's just really, really tight.
So you find that the hubs, I take it, are becoming very central to the way you look at the phone and use the phone.
Exactly.
And is there a difference between a hub and a tile, or is that, can we use those interchangeably?
I think that you can't, because I think a hub are locations like photos. Photos not only show the photos you've taken, but they also show other people's photos of kind of like what's new. Same thing with people. People's a hub, and it shows you your contacts, but also what's new. Whereas a tile, you can put anybody on the homepage, and it becomes a tile. So it doesn't really live. I think the definition that I kind of have for hubs versus tiles is hubs kind of live and breathe.
So from your perspective, from a Blend programming integrator who is very strong on the graphic design, but also very strong on the development, do you see a significant change in the way you're working programming for Windows Phone than you were for Silverlight?
Yes and no. The nice thing about the phone is it is Silverlight. So all the paradigms or all the technology that I've used in the past can still be ported over. I think the difference between developing for Silverlight and Silverlight for the phone is that I get a lot more frustrated when I develop Silverlight for the phone because, you know, we're still in beta mode. I think we're in the RTM tools, and it's just, there are some things that are very, very frustrating. Like, oh, I want to do that. and you can't do it. So, but for the most part, there's some kind of fundamental changes there. Kind of like when you're navigating between pages, it feels very much like HTML.
I find that the parts that are, this is going to maybe be self-evident, but the parts that are the same are very much the same. And the parts that are different are a whole different thing. And by that, I mean, it's not like they're similar, but there are subtle differences. If it's the same thing that is that you can accomplish on the web and on the phone, 99% of the time, you can code it just like you're coding a web application, not even think about it. And the things that are different, like talking to the accelerometer or making the phone vibrate and so on, well, that's just doesn't have a parallel in a web application. And so I have to go figure out how to do that. But then there is a consistency throughout .NET in the way APIs tend to work. So the learning curve for most things on the phone, I found, was fairly straightforward. What was daunting was the amount of it, that there was just so much to learn.
Right. I think you just gave a Yogi Bearism, Jesse.
I may have done that. Yeah. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded.
If I see a fork in the middle of the road, I take it.
That's right. So that's good. So a Jesse Libertyism will be the things that are the same, and the things that are different.
Right, right.
There you go. So let me take you in a different direction then, which is you and I had a discussion some time ago in which I posited that if you're teaching someone who does not already know Silverlight, and at the time we were talking about Silverlight applications, that for a long time we taught XAML in the very beginning, or if you were writing a book, it would certainly be in there by the third chapter. And with the advent of Visual Studio 2010 and a WYSIWYG editor, and certainly with Blend, that you could do a very different approach. You could teach from the drag and drop and property window approach and turn to XAML only significantly later in the learning curve. Now, a fair amount of time has passed, and now we're building WinPhone 7 applications. So do you think that that theory has proven to be a bust, or do you think it's even more true today?
I think it's more true in probably about 80% of the people. 20% are still going to be hardcore developers who are going to want that very deep down technical knowledge first before getting started. And for those, I completely recommend getting involved in XAML, open up a notepad and start writing XAML. But I think for the most part, teaching...
But well, why are you fooling around? Why not open up a notepad and write the P code that goes behind it?
Exactly. You know?
And for that matter, why not write the assembly code?
Exactly. I mean, but, you know, today's fast. I mean, today, you know, that's a cliche, but I think even before the bubble burst in 2000, like, just the pace of development, the pace of getting new products out, it just quickens. And I think the tools, we should work with the tools to enable us to create applications quickly. That said, you definitely need to know the kind of like the inner workings. So that's exactly what we're talking about. First,
well, so let me push you on that.
Okay.
And I don't want to push too hard, but let me push for a minute. And first of all, before I get lots of letters, no, it's not P-code, it's MSIL, but it's close to P-code. But the argument is always made to me that if you're going to understand this, you need to know what the XAML is doing. But given what Blend is capable of and the properties window in Visual Studio, I have to push back and say why. And I'm not really arguing that you should never open up the XAML window. And those of us who learned Silverlight by coding XAML find that we're still coding in XAML. But you could write a serious application, a real-world serious enterprise application, without ever opening up the XAML window. And I would argue that the XAML that you get will not be highly distinguishable from the XAML that was created by somebody who had that window open all day.
Right. For the most part, I agree. I think that when you have kind of like a big enterprise application, especially using a lot of data binding, it's really helpful. That's where I spend a lot of the XAML. I don't spend time in XAML like creating animations. That would be outrageous. Tweaking animations maybe. So same thing with designing an interface. I'm not, when I put a button on, I'm most likely in Blend, I double click the button and I go on, or I search in the assets for like a media element and I put that on the artboard, or in, and it becomes XAML, even when working with margins. So for the most part, you know, I don't really look at XAML.
So where are the places where you need to look at XAML, where if you weren't looking at the XAML, it would not be right?
I think you critically need to know and understand binding syntax in XAML.
And you don't think using the binding through the properties window or through the drag and drop binding that's available in Blend would be sufficient, that you need to know what the XAML is saying in order to be able to write the code that supports it?
Yes. I'm being very cautious here. So
because, well, I'm taking an extreme position, and I'm not even one I'm sure I agree with, but
sure.
I think it's worth pushing on because I'm not sure we as an industry have really adapted to the advent of the tools and the drag and drop approach in Silverlight. We have very much so in other technologies. Certainly back in WinForm days, you know, we had no choice.
Right.
So therefore it was all drag and drop. And no one said, wow, I can't really do a WinForm with drag and drop. I need to see the supporting code that this is spitting out. But with XAML, we make it so easy to do that. We invite the developer into the XAML. And I'm not sure at this point, given the tools we have, that that isn't really a legacy perspective. But I'm putting you on the spot as a spokesman for something I'm not sure you particularly want to defend.
No, it's fine. I think that we should talk about this kind of like HTML in you know, Front Page, Dreamweaver, or Expression Web, you know, if you're going to do a WYSIWYG approach on HTML, that HTML, like, we just have, I think we have an innate distrust of the HTML that's produced by WYSIWYGs. So we want to get into the HTML, or HTML is XML. We want to get into XML and kind of code it by hand. And so if you're coming from ASP.NET, or if you're coming from kind of HTML background, you'll want to get into that XAML.
But that's because, am I right? That's because you've been burned before by tools that produce crappy HTML.
Oh, over and over and over again. But the thing is that Blend and Visual Studio, when they put XAML, Blend at the beginning started to put a bunch of stuff in that I ended up taking out. However, Blend has become really, really good at being very minimal in its approach and putting just the XAML in that you asked without any more. So going back to the property windows, it goes from working with a tool from very early on that didn't produce the right XAML I wanted for binding. So I got very comfortable with setting up a binding by hand instead of using the tools. So now Blend 4 does do a really good job, and I believe Cider does a decent job at binding as well. But if you have like a big enterprise application and you're using a view model, or you're using some way to inject.
Right, who's kidding who? If you're doing MVVM and you have binding, you're going to do it by hand.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, to get started, I think this goes back to one of our earlier points, is that when I teach people, I actually don't open up Visual Studio. I start a new project with Blend. I open it up. I put a number of controls on there, create some sample data, which is awesome at doing, and putting some buttons, using behaviors, using states, and, you know, within 30 minutes to an hour, I've done it a lot, that you can have a working application that has some nice transitions and some...
No, in 30 minutes to an hour, you could have that. In half a day to a day, I could have
it. Well, we just need to sit down, right? And kind of bang through it. But
I'm on for that. Let's do that.
Perfect. But I mean, Blend enables you to do it very quickly. Something that I really like are states and the go-to state behavior. That
you were talking visual state.
Exactly. So, say for example, I'm hiding a showing a menu, or you know, toggling visibility of something. I'll create a state. I'll switch into on or off visibility or opacity or animated off, and then I'll say let's put a button on the screen, and I use the go-to state behavior. Drop that on a button for click. Then I just simply change the state. That's one of my favorite things to do, and it's just so easy not to do it. And when I see developers starting to code all that by hand, especially toggling visibility or even trying to do animation, it's really painful.
Okay, so I have two questions for you. First, for the developer who has been working on Silverlight on Windows Phone 7 but not using Blend yet, and they open up Blend, what is the right way for them to learn to become proficient in Blend for the purposes you're describing that every developer ought to be able to do?
Oh, boy. Where do you look? Look at your blog, Jesse.
That was nice. I appreciate that. Yeah. I wish that I had more material on Blend on there, and I intend to, but I'm not sure that you would find a complete soup-to-nuts description of how a developer should use Blend on my blog. That may be a deficiency I need to fix very soon.
Maybe. I think the Expression Blend team, I know they have a blog, some tutorials, a toolbox site. Adam Kinney has a great blog that covers information about Blend. But
let me just stop you on the toolbox site. I asked Adam about that, and his statement about that was he felt it was targeted more at designers than developers. Do you think that's right?
Yes.
I figured he knew because he did it, but
yeah.
So that was a bit of a setup.
He knew his.
So I mean, it's a tough call, because as a developer, one of my most popular posts on my blog is why you absolutely positively have to and are using Blend. Why developers are using Blend, and I believe that, but I'm not sure that we've done. You know, we've done a great job putting out a tremendous amount of information and material on Silverlight and any number of topics. I'm not quite sure that we've yet hit the developer's guide to using Blend well.
I think that's a very fair statement. And I think that one, I almost want to take it back to when you open Blend for the very first time, it's starkly different than Visual Studio. In my opinion, starkly different in a good way, but as a developer opening it up for the first time, you might look at it and it looks like Darth Vader. And
oh, yeah, run away!
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think that immediately scares developers off for their first impression. And it's hard. It's hard to break down those perceptions, but it's indispensable. So when you said popular blog posts, does that plop popular in terms of like everybody loves it, or is that like the most like a lightning rod?
It's frequently read is all I can tell you about. No, the lightning rod on my site is my assertion, which we can have another discussion about, that I am attempting these days to write my code with zero comments. But that's for another day. That does bring the lightning forth. So to bring us back to programming for Windows Phone 7 and Blend, a developer who is coming to all of this fresh is looking at, okay, what's the right order to learn things? Do I learn Silverlight and then the phone, or the phone first? Do I learn Visual Studio and then Blend, or both together, or Blend first? What's the order that you would suggest for a developer who wants to become a Windows Phone 7 developer?
Okay, so there were a number of questions there. Assuming I want to be a Windows Phone developer, and I'm coming, let's take a good use case about coming from like iPhone or Android or ASP.NET. Regardless, I want to be a Windows Phone developer. I would say open up Blend, get the tools, then open up Blend and create your first Windows Phone 7 application. Don't open up Visual Studio. Simply use Blend. You'll get frustrated with doing some of the coding, although the coding is okay to do. So using behaviors, you can simply add interaction without having to add code. Now, if I want to learn Silverlight, say, for example, I'm in the enterprise, because I see a lot of enterprise customers and a lot of energy in the enterprise regarding Silverlight, and it's kind of ironic because it's Silverlight 4. I guess the enterprise was kind of waiting for Silverlight to be stable before jumping in with both feet. So I see a lot of energy there, and enterprise developers coming in, when I tell them to open up Blend first, there's a little bit of on-edgeness, if that's a word, instead of Visual Studio, because you're comfortable with Visual Studio. For people who are comfortable with Visual Studio, use Visual Studio first, open it up, and then quickly I want them to get into Blend, so that way they can forget a little bit about the code, and they can place elements on there and make the application look the way they want to look, then go back to Visual Studio.
Corey, don't wuss out on me. You gave me a great provocative statement that we're going to bring you back for, which is if you're learning Silverlight or you're learning Windows Phone 7 programming, it's your position that you start with Blend.
Yes.
And Visual Studio closed, Blend open is your starting environment.
Exactly.